Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Don't Fuck It Up with me, your host, Kyle, and I want to introduce you to our very special guests this week. You will know them from shows like The Voice, All Together Now, and RuPaul's Drag Race UK. This queen can hit notes that would make Mariah jealous. It's Miss Davina DeCampo. How are you?
Oh, hello. I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm kind of just going a little bit insane, stuck in inside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sat here looking out of my bedroom window at people in, it's like a playing field just outside our window. And I'm looking at, because it's sunny, and I'm thinking, I should be out there training, getting rid of my little belly that I have been growing for the last 6 weeks. Instead, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sit and play a computer game, because fuck it.
It's much more fun to me. You can worry about the belly once quarantine's lifted and whenever.
Yeah.
You're not impressing anyone at the minute. You're at home alone.
No, I mean, I generally don't impress many people anyway, so that's absolutely fine. I'm used to that. That's not a problem.
So can you tell us your first experience in drag?
It's weird because I've always been dressing up. Always. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I was always dressing up as a girl. I didn't want to be Spider-Man. I wanted to be She-Ra. I didn't want to be Superman. I wanted to be She-Ra. Basically, I wanted to be She-Ra. So I'd always been dressing up. So I'd sort of always been doing drag, but just not calling it drag. Mm-hmm. You know, like whenever at university, whenever there was a fancy dress party, you know, like a theme party, I always went in drag, but I never called it drag. You know, so I went as like Tomb Raider, I went as Lara Croft, or I went as Christina Aguilera from the Moulin Rouge video, or you know, so it was always, I dressed up as a girl. The only time I didn't dress up as a girl, I dressed up as the Terminator when I was about 12. Bizarre. Who knows why? So I'd kind of always been doing drag. And then at university, like I said, I'd been dressing up at uni, but not. I hadn't really thought of it as drag. It was just more kind of cosplay, like really bad cosplay, but cosplay is how you would describe it. But I don't think I've ever really looked at gender in that, you know, if you're a boy, you have to dress like this or whatever. Yeah. So I've just gone, I like that character, so I'll wear those clothes. I think that's really cool. I did then in my third year politics and performance module, which was all about, you know, how the roles that you take on, do you actually have the right to take those on? You know, if you're not trans and you're playing a trans character, I think you have to really ask yourself those questions about telling that story, because it's a very, very different experience. And as a performer, you should be asking those questions of yourself, like, is this something that I can legitimately speak on, or should I actually let somebody else tell this story because it's not the right role for me? And I did a lot of research into gender politics, gender, and all, you know, reading Butler, all of those people. And so then one of my final performances was in drag. We did The Maids by Jean Genet, which usually is in drag, but the director decided that what she wanted to do was put three women in the roles, and then I would be the narrator in drag, sort of feeding out what it is that they're doing and how they're interacting with each other. So it's a male voice directing almost the females on stage. Yeah, so you know, it's a weird thing. And that was my first kind of toe in the water of thinking, you know, about drag.
Yeah.
I think I was like 21. Even though I'd been dressing up in drag forever, I'd never really thought of it as drag. I didn't really do anything with it for a while, because I went off and worked as a dancer and a dance practitioner for the sort of next year and a bit. And then my husband, my now husband, he was my husband at the time, but he's been running gay clubs for, you know, 25 years. And he was like, look, you're earning no money. You're never going to earn any money as a dancer. Like, dancers just don't earn loads of money. Yeah. That's not how it works. So why don't you, you know, think about doing drag or something? You know, instead of being paid 30 or 40 quid to turn up and dance for somebody, why don't you actually work on getting an act together as a drag queen? And then you'll be looking at more like 150, you know, which 15 years ago, that was fine.
Yeah.
Absolutely bloody brilliant. Great. Wow. £150 to turn up and sing some songs. Fine. Absolutely brilliant. Well, it's not that easy, is it? So I spent 2 years sort of working on drag, buying bits and pieces, while I was also working as a dancer and an actor or a singer, you know, whatever. That was kind of my day job. And then my weekend hobby, I guess, was doing drag. But I've always been performing and making work. I sort of spent 2 years, even though, like, I really understood how to create a show and how to put a piece of work together, somehow, when I started out in drag, I forgot all of those fundamentals of, you know, entertain the audience, who is it you're performing to, what's your target market, you know, I forgot all of those things, and just looked and was shit for a good 2 years, I would say, like, absolutely diabolically bad. And it's a very, I think some of it was because it's a very different audience, you know, like a pub audience is completely different to a theatre audience. Or going into a school and working with, you know, students, it's a completely different set of circumstances that you're working in. So I just sort of forgot how to implement those, which was weird because in my day job I was doing that, and then for the hobby I just sort of went, well, I never really committed. You know, it was, that wasn't great. But my first proper performance, I would say my first proper performance was in Battersea Coed, which is a little mining village in North Wales. It's just at the foot of Snowdonia. And there was like a sort of an alternative cabaret arts night going on. I sang some leader and the pianist didn't get the music, and so she couldn't play it because it was really hard. So it was more like a sort of Morecambe and Wise sketch than something, you know, polished and and well thought out. So I had to just pretend that she was useless. Even though she was a great pianist, she just wasn't that great at sight reading because it was a really hard piece. Yeah, I just had to pretend that it was all her fault and, you know, be the diva. Be like, oh, you're ridiculous. You know, whatever. Yeah, so it was a bumpy start for my first drag performance. But people were really kind and, you know, gave me some more opportunities to grow and develop and get better, which I'm so grateful for. God, I was fucking dreadful. I'm not saying I'm great now. Let's be clear about this. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just not as bad as I was. You know, everybody's on that learning journey their entire life.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first performance. And then I was, you know, doing this stuff in Stowe. The place that I was working there was running into financial difficulties. It'd been on a sort of decline for a long time. You know, it had a sort of, I'd say probably a 10-year decline. A lot of it, the thing with a lot of big older clubs was the millennium and then the smoking ban had a massive impact on them. And then they changed the licensing laws, which meant that every little pub was now a nightclub. You know, it stopped being that at 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, the pubs would all turf out and you would go to the nightclub. That stopped happening. So, you know, so those bigger clubs, which is why, you know, places in Manchester, you don't get that size of venue anymore because they're just unsustainable. Yeah. There isn't the footfall anymore in order to keep a big space running in the same way that there was 15, 20 years ago. So that was running into sort of difficulties. In between that, I'd gone to Ibiza for 2 years and learnt a lot. I worked with this drag queen out there who calls herself Uma God. And she doesn't really do drag that much anymore, but she used to do quite a bit around London, particularly at Tranny Shack when that was working a lot and Madame Jojo's. But she was great at makeup, like really masculine face, but super glamorous when in drag. And, you know, up to this point, the people that I'd been working with were very much the sort of one color foundation, budgie blue, red lipstick, get on and do something. You know, so I hadn't sort of seen that development of makeup in the same way. So working with her for 2 years, I learned so much about makeup and about making your own face, you know, because her face was very different to mine. Like I look like a horse. She was like a, you know, very handsome. So I would watch how she would do hers. And then I would take bits and pieces from that and go, oh, okay, I can apply it this way. And that works better for my face. Okay, now that's great. So I am forever indebted to Uma God. Obviously, I've been learning a bit more since then. but, you know, like I said, life is a learning journey and we're all on the journey together.
It definitely is. So it's safe to say that performing and stuff has always been a part of your life, like a big part of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Like even as a you know, one of my first memories of being at school is in assembly, and I don't know what we were singing, probably, you know, some junior school banger. And like I'm in reception, so like three, maybe four, and the headmaster says, oh, we have a little Pavarotti in the audience today. And he's looking at me, and, you know, I didn't know who the hell Pavarotti was, but I knew I was being pointed out, and bloody hell, I was embarrassed. I was so red, bright red. Oh my God, I could have died. But yeah, I've always, you know, singing particularly has always been like my thing. And then dancing and acting were kind of secondary to that. You know, like I learned how to sing much earlier than I learned how to dance. You know, everything that I'm able to do apart from singing, I've had to really work at. Like, I think I'm probably a bit dyspraxic. It takes me a long time to learn choreography and new moves and stuff like that. Yeah, so that stuff, you know, took a much longer time for me to kind of grasp and go, oh, okay, this is how your body is supposed to. Because I've always had very rounded shoulders and always been very anxious.
Yeah.
You know, so I've always had this sort of looking down thing rather than that sort of natural, just everything's in line and in place.
Yeah.
So it's taken me a long time to kind of develop those skills, and I would call them skills rather than a talent, you know, because I'm not naturally talented in those areas. They're things that I've had to learn and drill into my body.
Yeah.
You know, I like to be drilled every now and again.
So was singing something that you studied from a young age, or was it just a natural talent?
Yeah, it was just something that I sort of did. Like, I always sang in the choir, always. You know, as soon as I was allowed to join the school choir, I was there, I was singing, let me in, let me join in. Also, you know, all the school concerts and stuff like that. I had solos, and same at church. I used to go to church, brought up as a Methodist. And, you know, I'd always sing either at Christmas or the Easter or, you know, whenever. If there was something happening, quite often they'd wheel me out and get me to do something. So yeah, I've always been singing, and then I picked up the violin in junior school as well. So, you know, that really helps. If there's, you know, if anybody out there is, you know, thinking they want to be a singer, learn an instrument as well, because it will help with how, you know, reading music is so much easier than having to do everything by rote. You know, you can just look at it, work it out, boom, boom, boom. Okay, great. And it's, you know, for auditions and stuff like that, it's so helpful. So yeah, I've always been performing, always doing Amdram shows, Oliver, Sound of Music. I've been pretty much everybody in the Sound of Music, except for Maria.
One day.
I know. I got the hill. Maybe, you know, it could happen. Who knows? It would be like, I don't know, the gays are alive with the Sound of Cruising. Or something.
That's an idea. Take out the bank.
Yeah, there you are. I've sold.
One more.
That's yours. Take it. I don't mind. That's fine. Yes, I've always been performing. Just been, you know, I've been really lucky. My now husband was super supportive. Like, because, like, in between doing Ibiza, I was out of work. You know, I had sort of the first year I was out of work for nearly 6 whole months, which was just soul destroying for me, because I'm so much of how I see myself and value myself is down to my work.
Yeah.
You know, I put a real emphasis on I am my work rather than I am a human being with other things to offer to the world. No, like, so he was really supportive. So, you know, I was just working in the bar. And then when I came back after the second year, I, you know, things were moving with the club. It was called The Club. I spent a long time coming up with that name. Hours and hours of board meetings, focus groups. you know, I could see that things were kind of sliding away with the club. And then there'd been some sort of money wasn't being raised for the community through the club. So it stopped being a sort of as much of a community. And so I was like, well, let's try and raise some money for the local pride. There were a couple of people who I knew who'd been on TV shows and stuff like that. So I billed it as a mystery celebrity guest.
Smart.
Got loads of people from the community involved in performing, who then, of course, they bring people with them to come and watch. And then that, in turn, generates more interest anyway. So we did these nights, That's Entertainment, to raise money. And they were really successful. And that kind of helped to... After I'd been away in Ibiza, people had kind of just forgotten. They forget who you are. You know, 6 months to most people feels like a really long time for just a face.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily know you or hang out with you or stuff. So it helped to just really sort of reestablish me back in Stoke as being part of the community. And then when the club shut, when it finally closed its doors, we moved to a new premises down the other end of town, and that was called The Factory. So we went from the club to the factory. And the funny thing is, the building that it was in was one of the first major nightclubs in the UK. Like, it was one of the first big scale nightclubs. Stoke used to be a mecca for nightclubs. Like, people from Birmingham and Manchester, Nottingham and all surrounding would get coaches into Stoke-on-Trent to Hanley to go clubbing, because there weren't that many clubs in Manchester. Yeah. Or, you know, it was the place to be. And actually, the building that we were in, this very first nightclub, which was a 3,000 capacity venue, was called The Place. Again, spent a long time coming up with these things. They spent years, months developing these ideas. So, and they had, you know, that stage. So the stage that I ended up performing on every Saturday night had The Beatles, Elton John, you know, major stars had been performing in that venue on the same stage that I then was working on every Saturday night.
That's amazing.
And that for me was my sort of, that was the sort of catalyst and key in my development, I would say, as a drag artist and a creator and performer, because I got the opportunity to just try out loads of different ideas on an audience that kept coming back. They kept coming back because we kept doing new stuff. And that's always been part of my sort of philosophy anyway, is you should always be adding new material in constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you have a static audience, once they've seen it, they've seen it. And so why am I coming back? Yeah. I want to see something new. I did 4 years at The Factory, and in the first 3 years, I had a rota system. So it was me and Berry Cherry, and then we would have a guest each week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there were four or five different people, and each of them had four or five set shows. So it was like, that's our Christmas show, that's the one that we do. There's a Disney show, there's Madonna versus Mariah or Lady Gaga. It was Madonna versus Lady Gaga and Mariah versus I can't remember. There were 24 different set shows, though. You know, everybody had their own sort of four set shows, which had its own. So each of us had four different numbers for that set show, and each of those numbers had a different costume, wig, you know, all of that stuff. And then we would have group number at the beginning, group number at the end. Mm-hmm. So it just meant that I was able to develop loads and loads of new ideas and loads of numbers with a team of people, and all of us would support each other. And that, I think, is what was the kind of key to it, was that we were all supporting each other. So we would show each other our numbers and go, what do you think? And they'd go, well, yeah, that bit's good and that bit's good. But I mean, this bit, it feels like a bit woolly or weird. Yeah. Or, you know, have you thought about maybe doing this, or maybe you could do that? Or, you know, so we would share ideas. And that really sort of helped me develop and feel like, oh, actually, I now have my own little community within this place. So that was a really, really special time. And that was when I really fell in love with drag, you know?
Once you developed that persona, how did you actually come up with the name of Divina De Campo? Was that something that came with you from the very beginning or down the line?
Yeah, no, that was down the line. I sort of feel like most drag queens start with one name, you know, their first name, and then they change it. And when they change it, that's when they start to become a bit clearer about who it is that they are as a drag queen. Mm-hmm. So I'd been called Madame Farettina. She talk like this. She's very Italian. She sing all of the Italian arias. And that was, you know, when I'm talking about, I sort of didn't pick up those transferable skills from my day job and put them in the nightclub scene. That's what I'm talking about. Like,
okay.
No, first, nobody can say Madame Farettina when they're drunk at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, that's just not gonna happen. And then singing Italian arias to drunk stokies on a Saturday night, that's not it, kids. That's not what they want. They don't want that.
No. They want to see Lady Gaga.
Sorry to tell you. Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing, you know, so when I sort of started doing more stuff like Lady Gaga and Katy Perry, and that was when people started to really react, you know, so you could, as long they were fine with you doing like, okay, go on and sing Casta Diva. Great, brilliant. Now do something else. You know, that's very much what that audience was like. And that actually was great in terms of developing, you know, because it gave me so many coping mechanisms for if the audience aren't with you, what do you do? Will you change what you're doing? And it just allowed me to kind of develop those coping mechanisms so that now very little when I'm on stage phases me. I'm not really bothered what people, you know, I can look at it and I can go, okay, this crowd, they need this. And I have it in my box of tricks because I developed so much already while I was in Stoke. I think I'm pretty ready for most audiences.
Yeah.
So then it was when we moved from the club to the factory that I changed my name. We did, in the first 6 months of us opening, I ran a competition and just loads of people put loads of different names in the hat. And I picked, it was a sort of amalgamation of different things that people had put into the suggestion box, Divina De Campo. I think that a drag name should give an indication of what kind of artist you are. You know, what is the work that you're going to be making? So Divina is Italian. So I will be singing some Italian at some point. That probably is going to happen. There's going to be some opera shenanigans going on. And then De Campo, because I'm campus tits. You know?
Well, fifth.
So it's exactly. So it can, you know, it tells you what's going to now go on. There we go. Perfect.
you're well prepared for a show. So once you started working in TV and you auditioned for the likes of The Voice, how did that transfer into you appearing on All Together Now?
So I didn't know this, but it was a friend of mine who put me forwards. They couldn't do the filming for All Together Now, and they put me forwards for it. Because I'd always thought, you know, maybe the BBC had kept me on file, or you know, somebody somewhere had kept me on file. But no, it was a friend of mine who actually then in the second series was doing some of the warm-up.
Okay.
He's called Tom. Yeah, he's called Tom. And he also, Ruby Murray, I don't know if you know her, she was on Britain's Got Talent singing Ness and Dorma. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, what a voice. My gosh, what a voice. Absolutely fantastic. And a real, you know, lovely guy. Very, very sweetie darling. Oh my God, yeah. Such love. Oh my God. Ah, yeah, absolute love. But great, absolutely great fun. Wicked sense of humour. Brilliant on stage, like savage. Really great on stage. Love him. So he'd put me forwards because I think he'd been working with them doing some backstage stuff already, you know, warm-up bits and little bits and pieces, which is kind of how you have to sort of work it. If you can't get the agent to get you straight in, then there are different paths to get yourself in. And yeah, so he'd suggested my name, I think, because they contacted me rather than the other way around. It was the casting director for it sent me an email. And so I think that's why, because Tom had passed me on. So I am very grateful to Tom. Thank you, darling.
And how was that experience?
Great. Really, really great. The food's dreadful. but the rest of it was really good fun. It's so rare that you get to share that amount of time with so many other people who work in your industry, but in completely different areas.
Yeah.
You know, so there were people there who were rappers, people who were crooners, people who were tribute art, and even just in drag, it's very rare that I get to spend any time with anybody else who does drag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you turn up at the venue, you get yourself ready, you go on stage, do your thing. The host is there, but you can't hang out because she's DJing Austin. And actually working. And so then you sort of pack all your shit up and leave, you know? So you very rarely actually get to spend time with anybody else who's working in the same field as you.
Mm-hmm.
So to have, both times we filmed, it was a sort of 2-week process. And to have 2 weeks with, you know, 100 other people who are all working in the same industry and immensely talented, you know,
there are
so many phenomenally talented people on that panel. And like Lily, was on Britain's Got Talent Just Gone.
Mm-hmm.
So she plays piano and she does, this is the funniest thing, she's Romanian and does Cockney sing-alongs. I mean, okay, how did that come about? Who knows? But that's where we are.
Yeah.
But she's great fun. Magic, she calls herself Magic Betty.
Okay.
She's wonderful. You probably don't know who Margarita Prakatan is, but she was on the Clive James show, and I would say that Magic Betty is kind of like a modern version of Margarita Prakatan. Go and check out the Margarita video. Yeah, she's hilarious. Oh baby, my cuckoo. Ooh! She is crazy, but great fun.
Yeah, and your standard process for filming all together now, what did that look like in a day? Was it an awful long shooting process or?
They were long days. It was, most days we had to be down in the lobby and kind of ready for, I think it was like 8:30. It was usually like 8:30 so that we'd be there at 9:00. So sort of 8:00, 8:30 so that we'd be ready for 9:00. And then we would be there till probably 10:00. At night, I think. Yeah, probably 10 at night, because dinner was like 6:00. So, of course, if I have to leave at 8:00, I'm going to be up at 5:30,
mm-hmm.
ready to put my face on. Gosh. You know, because there are other things that you have to do in the morning before you go out for a full day, dear. Eating, obviously. I'm talking about eating.
Now, obviously, you had experience with the BBC, and then when Drag Race came around and you found out that it was going to be another BBC production, did you think that would kind of give you a leg up knowing that you had worked for the production company before, or was it just because it's a channel it didn't really matter?
No, if anything, I thought it would count against me.
Really?
Yeah, because the BBC, because of the way that it's funded, you know, it's not like ITV where for X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, they literally can say to you, come and do Britain's Got Talent, you'll get a golden buzzer and you'll be through to the semi-final. And I know that happens, you know, because I know people who it's happened to. because the BBC is funded by the public, it has to be completely transparent and fair,
mm-hmm.
And unbiased. And so because I'd done so many bits and pieces for the BBC already, I sort of thought, they're probably not going to take me on for this series because of all of that already, you know, because otherwise it has the potential to look like favoritism.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I can say is that I must have impressed somebody somehow in my video, which, you know, rewatching my video, I'm not sure I impressed myself, but I'm not going to worry about it.
You're here now.
Whatever I did. Done.
So what initially made you want to audition for Drag Race?
I've worked with loads and loads and loads of the Drag Race girls already. Mm-hmm. Because I'd worked with Holy T for 4 years, something like that. I just like working. I've always liked working, and I like challenges. I don't like competitions. I don't feel like I do that well in competitions because I get too in my head and I worry about it and what are people going to think? Oh, no. Ooh, rather than just getting on and doing it. But, you know, you have to make a decision about how you want your career to progress. Yeah. And Drag Race is a huge opportunity. You know, the question would not be, why would you? For me, the question would be, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. It's a huge platform.
Exactly. And all of these shows are a risk. You have to be smart when you're going in, and you have to understand that. You look at some people who've been on talent shows and it's destroyed their career. Mm-hmm. And some of that is because they didn't understand that the competition isn't everything. It's about who you actually are that's important. The most important thing is trying to show who you are. And that's, I think, because I've done All Together Now and The Voice and various other bits and pieces, I sort of had more of an understanding of that, you know. And I'd really, when I was teaching, we'd done a whole section on reality TV competitions. Okay. And the kids understood really quickly about the dynamics of how the shows work. You know, they could see within the first minute, it's not about the competitor, it's about the judges, you know, for Britain's Got Talent. But immediately they just go, well, I've seen 10 seconds of the contestant, but I've seen 50 seconds of the judges. This isn't about the contestant, it's about the judge. And so if a year 7, year 8 can work that out, you know, everybody else can see well. Exactly. And so then it becomes about you as a contestant. Who are you? That's what makes you interesting. Mm-hmm. And so that was my whole intention with going on Drag Race, was because people had just kind of seen tits and teeth and hi, ooh, yeah, woo! Which, of course, is a massive part of my personality. Oh, yeah. But I also wanted them to see the other bits of my personality. And I, you know, warts and all, everything. So, you know, sometimes I can be a bitch. Sometimes I'm really nice. And I think I showed that. You know, I showed that I am a rounded human being who will behave in a multitude of different ways. Which, you know, all I can say is I'm really glad and grateful that they showed that. Because it's so easy for anybody to twist and edit, you know, especially like, you know, if you look at Susan Boyle on Britain's Got Talent, they put the that music behind her.
Yeah.
And instantly you go, oh, she's going to be rubbish. She's terrible. She's this, she's that. And then they put the, you know, music behind her when she's finished and everybody's on their feet clapping and cheering, so that you get that emotional response. And that's editing rather than reality. All shows are like that. That's the thing. All shows are like that. And you as a contestant have to understand that. And then you just have to you know, when I was talking to Katya, she was like, you have to offer yourself up to the drag gods and just not have any fear about it. And that's what you're doing when you're putting yourself in the hands of any TV show. You know, you are offering yourself up and going, okay, this is what I've got. And you know, you can see it on things like 8 out of 10 Cats, because they film for 4 hours or 5 hours, and you see one
40,
and that's because there's so much stuff. Exactly, that's so much stuff that they have to cut out.
Wow.
So like we did, you know, the bit where they run on the 8 out of 10 Cats does the countdown. We did one of the bits where you run on, some of the girls had been really kind of chatty and funny throughout the show, but a lot of that just didn't get seen because there just isn't time.
Yeah.
You know, so as a producer and an editor and all of that stuff, you then have to make sense of all of that material and go, how do we make this work? You know, which I absolutely would not want to do at all. And, you know, like I say, I'm incredibly grateful for them showing as much of me being as me as, you know, you possibly can. They were very kind to me.
At your first initial walk into the workroom itself, what was going through your head in that moment?
Don't shit yourself.
And is it very surreal?
Yeah, completely. I mean, honestly, every competition I've ever done has felt like an out-of-body experience. You know, I don't deal with competitions that well.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like I'm kind of looking from the outside in on myself. I think that's because as an anxious person, someone who does suffer with anxiety, the stuff that I can't control is what scares me, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been super, super lucky that for, you know, at least 10 years, I've been almost completely in control of everything that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly every performance that I've given had been choices that I've made. So if I've made the choice and it's shit, I can take that because it was my fault.
Yeah.
You know, if it's my fault, I don't mind. That's fine. I was in control of that. And, well, I should have done better. But when it's somebody else, you know, handing that over to somebody else, I find very, very difficult. I find that, you know, that's the most stressful thing to me. Mainly because so many times I've handed stuff over to people, you know, like, can you make this for me? Can you do that? Can you edit this? Can you? And they pick the worst bit, or they, you know, the stitching is shit, or they haven't put the zip in properly, or, you know, and you look at it and you go, I have paid you to do this. And I could have done it better myself. I don't understand, you know. The only time when that will probably not be true is styling wigs, because I hate that. Yeah, absolutely. And get somebody else to do that.
Everyone praised you for your runway look from the laundry bags. Still to this day, do you get sent pictures of laundry bags saying, oh, there's Davina?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love it when people send me pictures of that stuff. I think it's hilarious. Because, the world is quite a serious place, but I try my very best not to take myself seriously. Because, you know, you could be dead tomorrow. And it's
very true.
You're just lucky that you were here. You know, the present really is exactly that. It's a gift. You know, the fact that you're even here is 700,000 million to one that you even exist. You know, try and enjoy it a bit while you're here. And so, no, I don't take myself seriously, especially with stuff like that, you know. So when people send me pictures of laundry bags at the train station or they've just gone into Wilkinson's and there she is hanging up next to the fabric spray, you know, I'm fine with that. I think it's really funny. And, you know, those are the things that help solidify you in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Those things which people remember, those standout moments for you.
And how did you come up with the concept for that design?
Well, I've been watching a lot of runways, and particularly McQueen and Westwood. You know, I'd been watching a lot of their runways. I did this film, Diva, which is a sort of, it's called an operatic fantasia. It's only 6 minutes long. But, you know, you can find it on the internet. You just type in Davina de Campo Diva and it'll come up. And I made it with this company, Sixth Finger Studios. And they, it was part of Channel 4's Random Acts season that they do.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of high fashion shoots. You know, so they do a lot of filming for fashion houses and stuff like that, you know, Prada, Gucci, those kind of people. So how the hell they ended up working with me on something I have no idea. But that really sort of spurred me into becoming a bit more interested in fashion. It's never really been something that I've been that interested in. Like, most of my drag career has been about costuming. It's not been about fashion, you know? So, like, I would do Lumiere, the artist, and I would come out in a gold, this horrible gold dress, and those, you know, the big tubes that they used to carry around, those massive window stickers for like BHS and places like that.
Yes, yes.
So I had chopped some of those up and turned it into a candle for my head and for my hands.
Okay.
So I, you know, it had drag for me was about, you know, where's the joke? Where's the funny? Where's the gimmick? Where's the thing that's going to make people interested, rather than being, God, look how beautiful I am. Oh, I'm so beautiful. You know, because I think in my experience, most of the people that I've come across who have been incredibly beautiful have also been exceptionally boring. And that's very much been my sort of take on drag anyway. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I worked with them that I started getting a bit more into the fashion side of stuff. You know, so that you can kind of do both. And I think somebody who's really good at that is Bianca. You know, she always looks beautiful. There's a slight sort of nod to costume in there, but the garments themselves are always perfect.
Yeah.
And then her makeup is, of course, extremely large. But she gets that kind of mix really, really, really well. Because drag for me has always been the sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink thing. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not female impersonation. What I do, like, that is absolutely not it. I mean, Christ, that would be terrifying. Wouldn't that be horrendous?
No, would not. The birth of the Frock Destroyers, as everyone knows by now who they are. You showed off your unbelievable range, like that is insane. Even the first time I listened to the track, I was like, is that real?
I absolutely adore working with them, you know, and I'm really, really hopeful that we'll be able to work together in the future and make some more Frock Destroyers loveliness.
Fingers crossed.
For everyone. They're both so fantastic. Like, Bagger has genuinely has a fantastic singing voice. It's genuinely brilliant. It just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. You know, her tenor range is insane. And then Blue is just, you know, Bagger's hilarious and phenomenally talented vocally. Like, she's just so good. She's so fun. There's been times where we've been working together and, you know, all three of us, and she'll be talking and I'll just stand there and I'm just laughing. Because I am more than happy to just let her get on and chat away. Because she's so funny. You know, I'm having a great time just listening to her rather than feeling like I need to push and, this is my space. Let me in. I think I used to be a bit more, you know, push and shovey when I was in my early 20s. But as I've become more self-assured in a lot of ways, you know, it's weird. I'm more self-assured about, you know, what I can do and what I can bring to the table. But now I care more about what people think. Whereas, you know, when I was 18 to 20, I could not give a shit what anybody thought. I don't give a rat's what you think. Fuck off. And then, of course, Blue is just so brilliant with makeup. Like,
she is.
Just astoundingly brilliant. And her looks are glorious. And she also can sing really well. You know, she says, oh, no, I'm not a singer, blah, 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 blah. But actually, she has a great voice. You know, she just needs to trust herself a bit more, I think. And again, when I get to work with them both, it's just, we just have so much fun. Like, I freaking love it.
So did you ever think when creating that song that end up in the actual official charts? Like, it's the only
Oh, my God. How amazing. Top 10 charts.
That is unbelievable.
Top 10. And I shared a memory this week of me and Bagger, because 8 years ago we became friends on Facebook.
Okay.
And who'd have thought 8 years ago that her and I would be sharing a top 10?
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Nobody would have thought that, not in a million years.
You had spoke about a few important issues like bullying and Section 28 on the show. Something when I was watching the show, I didn't know what Section 28 was until it was explained. Would you have any advice for anyone that's going through something similar at this time well, not obviously this time because they're at home, but while they're at school, with bullying or discovering their own identity and how they can come out of it the other side.
So, I mean, the first thing is it's just for now, you know, school anyway is just for now. It's not forever. And so you have to make a decision. You know, the choice that I made at school was I'm going to focus on what I want. Where do I want to go after this? Because I'm not going to be in school forever. It feels like a long time, but it's not. And it'll be gone. And those people who are like that while you're at school will be gone, and you'll never have to speak to them ever again if you don't want to. You'll never have to see them. But it's up to you to make that choice to go, what do I want? And that's the key. What is it that you want? And then you can work out how to get there. You know, once you can understand what it is that you want out of your life, you can put in place all the things that will help you to arrive at that destination.
When the cast was announced and your Meet the Queens was shown, how did you find the reception towards yourself?
I try not to read the comments anyway. Mm. Yeah. You know, I'm old school and everybody's a critic, and the only real critic that matters is you.
It's yourself.
So I didn't really read the comments. You know, there were a couple of articles that I did see that were quite negative about me. You know, things like those, you don't even know who these people are, and already you're trying to judge them, you know, just based off their very first look. And I've always hated those things. I think they're just worthless trash and actually really damaging to society in a lot of ways. You know, let's judge these people and what they have to offer on what they look like from just seeing them. Like, fuck off, mate. Absolutely fuck off. Get in the bin. Get in that bastard bin, you complete dickhead. It is what it is, though, isn't it? That's the thing. It is what it is. And there's nothing you can do about it. And it was from that I sort of thought to myself, actually, I don't think this is going to be helpful for you reading or seeing this stuff. So I just didn't. I just didn't look at it. If it's not useful or helpful, get rid of it.
Yeah. How has your life changed since the show has aired?
In a lot of ways, life is exactly the same as it ever was, because I've always been working and making things. It's just busier. That's all it is. It's just ramped up how busy it is. So instead of having, you know, maybe 4 gigs a week, it'll be 5 or 6 gigs a week.
Different countries and
exactly. And then sometimes, you know, instead of being in front of 2 people and a barmaid, that will be in front of 2,000 people, you know. So, you know, that's what's changed. And more of the people who come to the gigs now are there for the gig rather than turning up and, oh, there's something is on here, you know. So they're there with the intention of being there rather than turning up for a drink and actually, oh, there's a drag queen on, let's see what this is about. You know, which gives you more space as a performer. It allows you to again, you know, try out new stuff and be a bit more experimental. You know, just fire up what your craft again.
You have your EP Decoded. Was that something that you always had in mind that you wanted to do after the show?
Yeah, I've been writing and making music, dance, drama, you know, various things for the past 15 years. So it's not like something completely new that I went, now I've done this, I'm gonna write some songs, you know, because I've been doing that anyway, but just not in such a focused way. You know, this is clearly like a body of work. And so I'd never done it in that sort of way. It was just a great opportunity. And, you know, my management company have been great, PG, at helping me to kind of steer my way into what it is that I actually want to be doing. Because I'm very much one of those people who wants to do everything. You know, I want to act, I want to dance, I want to be in a musical, I want to be in a film, I want to be in this, I want to be in that, I want to learn Spanish, I want to, oh, I've never been able to speak Greek, let's do that, you know. And the reality is you only have so much time in your life, and there's only so many things that you can do. If you want to do them to a high standard, you have to focus on them. So you, again, you know, even though I always knew I wanted to perform, it's still been a process of whittling it down to what is it that you really want to do? You know, what is it that you really want to do? And I would say that that's what Drag Race very much has done, is given me the opportunity to have that space to make those decisions and start making them happen.
Do you have any plans in the future to release any more albums or EPs? Good, good.
Yes. Yeah, I'm already working on some stuff. I'm not going to tell you what, because you jinx it. You know, I'm a big believer in, mainly because if I've ever had an audition, and then I've told even just one person about the audition, I don't get the part. But if I don't tell anybody about it, I just go for it and I do my thing, then I get the part, you know? Mm. So I'm always more successful when I don't talk about it before it's actually happened and it's done and it's ready. We're not on the same level as Lady Gaga or Madonna. Nobody's going to leak my shit. you know, that's not what I'm worried about, you know, before it's ready. I definitely want people to see it when I feel like it's ready.
Yeah. So obviously we're still in lockdown till God knows when, but do you have any upcoming projects that in the pipeline that you can talk about?
I've got loads of stuff coming up within, well, in May. So this weekend, the Sibs remix of A Drag Race Song is now, probably by the time this airs, will be out. So you can get that on iTunes or Amazon or, you know, whoever your music provider is, streaming to your heart's content. And also go and check him out as well. He's on Instagram, Sibs Music. He's really great, doing some really great stuff. And then Gratify is almost ready as well. The video and remixes as a single, that's almost ready. So I'm super excited for that. That's going to be out this month. I'm pretty sure it's going to be out this month. And then, you know, as soon as it's possible, I'm going to be doing loads of panto. I have a diary full of panto, actually. You know, the thing that I'm always really conscious of is trying to do different things. So, you know, it's obviously it's not Cinderella each time. It's a different panto each time, different jokes, different looks, different costumes. One of those will be with my Brocking sisters. We'll be doing Sleeping with Cinderella. God, who do I think I am? Christ. Rewriting the whole panto shenanigans. Yeah, so Sleeping with Beauty, which I'm really excited about. That's going to be a big tour with those two. I'm also doing The Little Mermaid, obviously, because I've, you know, got that red wig ready. make it pay for itself. And then in the new year as well, there's another panto going on. There's a theatre project going on. Hopefully that's going to happen. You know, it's all fingers crossed because, you know, you don't know how many theatres are going to survive.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality of the situation. We don't know how many are going to survive. So fingers crossed there'll be a theatre project, which if it does happen, I am so fucking excited about. Oh my God, I'm going to die. and then there is, what else is there? There's something else going on as well. Oh, there's my one woman tour. What else is there? So the Red Wig and Silver Dress tour.
Oh, perfect. Brandon. And where will that be? Is it UK, Ireland, Europe? Where is it?
Yeah, currently it's just England, Scotland, and I think a date in Wales. I'm trying to get it so that we can have a date in Northern Ireland and then hopefully in Dublin as well. And then fingers crossed, yeah, we can take it into Europe and have a good time out there as well. You know, that would be great. And then, you know, fingers crossed, there'll be lots more music, lots more tours, and lots more fun for everyone. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
What about digital shows? You seem to have been keeping yourself busy with a lot of digital drag shows.
Do you have any more? I've been doing, I do. I've got a digital drag show this weekend, and then I also have another few in the pipeline. It's difficult. You don't want to overexpose. Mm. You know, you want to do enough, but not too much.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I am with it. I've done a lot of online content, and I sort of think, am I doing a bit too much? Am I not? I don't know. But I think we're all having exactly the same experience, aren't we? That we're all going, I've done this a lot. Oh, I'm doing something else. Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows? By the end of this, maybe I'll be a gourmet chef. Who knows?
Who can Everyone's say? Going to come out of quarantine with a new skill, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Davina De Campo, Michelin starred chef. I've been nominated for the Digital Drag Awards. Six of them, I know, which is pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, if I don't win any, it's fine. I'm, you know, that's fine. Obviously, I'd like to win one, but yeah, six. So vote for me.
How do we vote?
You just go on to the Digital Drag Fest page and you have to scroll down and then there's a red arrow. So that's how you go to vote. There was, you know, some people have got confused about it because it's one of those pages where you have to scroll down rather than the button being right in front of you. Who knows why? I don't know why you'd do that. But that's what how it is. So yeah, scroll down for that. And yeah, so my show's on stage this Sunday, which I'm excited for. I'm going to do a sort of Sunday Showtime thing, which anybody who is from Manchester will know that I was doing shows on Sundays forever.
What time is your show?
I think it's at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, UK time?
At 6 o'clock. Yeah, UK time, 6 o'clock. Not GMT, though, because that's an hour forwards or behind now. I don't know.
Oh.
So I know. It's so confusing. Greenwich Mean Time is because of daylight savings.
Yeah.
That's why. So I just say UK time so that nobody's confused. Like,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Giving people a quick outlook of what you've been nominated for. You've been nominated for Most Outrageous Show, Funniest Show, Best Live Vocals, Best Artist, Best Costuming, and Best Digital Show. So six opportunities to win. So we need to get voting for Davina.
I mean, yeah. Best Costuming. I'm not sure that's wholly accurate. A jacket and a red wig. I mean, okay. Yeah, but I mean, lovely. Thank you so much for all the support, everybody. Yeah, it's exciting. And that's, you know, that's one of the joys of being part of the alumni is, you know, you get to do all of these things that you never would have done before, and you get to be connected with loads of people that you never would have met or come across in everyday life, you know. That's one of the amazing things.
Could you let our listeners know of your social media handles where they can follow you or support you in any way, with it being merchandise or how to buy your EP? Sell yourself.
So it's really, really easy to find me on anything. I'm just Davina De Campo. So that's Divina. So two I's and one A, just like my body. And then De Campo, DECAMPO. And it's the same handle on everything. It's Davina De Campo on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I do have Snapchat. I don't use it, so don't add me there. And if you want to buy merch, there's merch available in LA, so you can buy from my webpage. And I'm currently in the process of setting up a UK store as well, because obviously, you know, with the pandemic as it is, things coming from abroad are taking a very long time. So I'll be getting things online as soon as possible. And all that information will be on my Instagram and my Twitter, so that you'll be able to find it.
Nice. Perfect. And as usual, you can follow us at Don't F It Up on Instagram and Kyle Divine Clark, all one word, again on Instagram. So Davina, I want to thank you very, very much for joining me today and taking your afternoon. Obviously, we're stuck at home, like, so we don't really have much plans, but for taking the time to spend with me.
No problem. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you very much, and I hope you have
a lovely day. I said Kyle really strangely then. I'm sorry. Can I just say that again? We'll do that again.
Of course you can.
Thanks a lot, Kyle. Oh, my God.
You're very welcome.
Or my teeth fell out and I put marbles in my mouth or something.
And you have been amazing to talk to. And I hope soon, once this lockdown is over, that we can get you back to Belfast and performing again.
I would love that. Bring me back. Let's do it all again.
Yes, definitely. But Davina, I hope you have a lovely afternoon and we'll speak again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye.